Morning. It's a little loud for me. Okay. My name is Jennifer, and I am the new coordinator of the nursery here at church, but it hasn't actually kicked into effect. I've said yes, and I am in that spot, but it hasn't, like, we haven't made the announcement to the captains and stuff, so I haven't done anything in that capacity yet. So if you ask me questions, I don't have any experience there yet. I'm just starting, and I'm learning, and I'm excited about it, but I haven't actually done anything yet, so. Anyway, my name is Jennifer Rosebrock, and I have been a part of this church for about 5 years now. I came from a very small church, so I have experience in both aspects. And in college, I took a class on tennis, and the first rule I learned was that you make excuses before you play, not after you play, about how well you did. So I'm going to make my excuses now. I don't have a computer, so all my stuff is handwritten, so I may get lost several times, so just please bear with me if I, like, because I actually wrote out, like, word for word what I wanted to say because I couldn't do bullet points or whatever. So if I get lost, just smile and wait, and I'll find my spot. But he said, I am going to be speaking about the church nursery, and this is a very practical session. I don't have anything spiritual. I didn't go in that direction. Just very basics of how we do what we do, why we do what we do, just very straightforward and practical. And I know that I'm relatively young, and I'm only the mother of one and a half, almost two-thirds, so I don't have, like, vast years of knowledge or experience, and I hear a really bad ring. I don't know if you guys hear it, but I sound very bad up here. I don't have vast years of knowledge or experience as a mother or even working with children, so, like I said, I don't have a lot to offer, but I do have some experience working in a nursery, and I worked in a very, I came from a very small church with a small nursery, so I have experience working in a smaller church with a smaller facility, and I have experience here. I've been working in the nursery here for a little over a year and a half. And so, although I don't have a lot of experience, I do have some, and I'm actually gonna start by telling you a horror story that happened to me at my church back home, and it will kind of explain a little bit of why I didn't like the church nursery, and I avoided working in there as much as possible. And I really avoided it when I moved here, thinking it's a bigger place, it's even scarier. Like, there are a lot more kids. So, but I'm going to begin by telling you that quick story from my past dealings in the nursery. And like I said, to be honest, this experience, along with some other things that happened at my church back home, I'm from a small country church in Missouri. That's where I was before I moved here. And all these things made working in the nursery somewhat of a chore and something that actually, when I got the schedule each month, I dreaded seeing my name on there as many times as I did because I didn't want to do it. But hopefully, after I tell you the story, I'll give you a list of some things you can think about and do to combat some of the common issues that make working in the nursery dreadful. I don't know how many of you have to do it, how often, but even if you do and you enjoy it, I can tell you that there probably is a large handful of people that really do kind of dread working in the nursery, and there are some things you can do to take away most of that dread and most of the burden that the nursery can become. And then I'll finish by giving you some key points and going over some of the things from our actual policy manual that we have. Okay, like I said, the church I grew up in was a smaller church. We ran, at that time, about 200, but you never had more than 6 to 10 kids in the nursery. It wasn't a big deal. And our original nursery was a small room at the back of the auditorium, and that had gotten too small. So they moved the nursery to an old classroom in the annex, which was downstairs from the church auditorium. And it was just a long, narrow classroom. And we had come to the point where we need to separate babies from the older, you know, the older toddlers, whatever. And so they had put a half wall partition, a temporary movable wall, not built, but just you can buy them for, like, school settings, down the middle of the room. And the babies were at the back half and the toddlers at the front half. There was a divider in the middle, and there was one door, and that door led from the nursery out to the open junior church area. There were classrooms all around a big room, so there was one door out to that area. And like I said, the babies were in the back of the nursery, and the toddlers in the front of the nursery. So that meant the door was in the room where the toddlers were. So you probably kind of think of what's going to happen to me while I'm working. But that door was a Dutch door. It opened top and bottom. You know, it wasn't that big of a deal, but the thing that made the big deal is that our church had an open door policy. Parents could come in and drop off their kids or check on them and they could come in at the at the end of service and come get their children and leave with them. There was a night when I was working the nursery. The other problem that we had was that it was a small nursery. There weren't a lot of kids, so there weren't a lot of workers. And usually what happened to me is I usually got put in the nursery on a Wednesday night, and it was usually myself and a teen girl, which teens can be very helpful, but not always the most attentive and most responsible with some things. So you have to imagine it's myself who, at that time, am a young single. I'm in my early 20s, and I have a teen as my only other helper who's maybe 14 or 15, and she's working. So obviously, I had to take care of the baby half the nursery. So I'm on the back half of the big classroom, and she's on the front half with the babies. And everything goes well. It's a good night. We don't have a lot of kids. I think we probably had a little more than 10 because it was a special Wednesday night service. But I'm watching them, and what happens is at the end of the night, I find out, the service ends before we expected it. We had a guest speaker that night, so service got over quicker. So it's the usual mad rush times 10 because we're checking diapers, getting everything back into diaper bags, starting to get things for people to come get their children. And about 5 to 10 minutes into this, someone comes into the nursery and says, "Do you realize that someone just found a 2-year-old little girl in the parking lot of the church?" We don't really know what happened, but we assume a parent came in to get their child and didn't get the door latched behind them. And there's only one worker on the toddler side where the door is, and the little girl must have gotten out, and no one noticed her till she had gotten upstairs and out into the parking lot. To make it even worse, that little girl belonged to the guest speaker. To make it even worse, no one realized she was gone. I didn't even know she was gone until someone came and told me we found this little girl outside. Thankfully, nothing happened. But it's things like that that can put a bad taste in someone's mouth. And actually, when I moved to this church, I didn't work in the nursery. I didn't work in the nursery until after I had my first daughter, and I only signed up then because it's a requirement here if you're a church member and you have a child in the nursery to work in the nursery, and that's the only reason I even started working in the nursery, was because I knew that it was expected or required of me. And so I had a lot of fears, because that wasn't the only thing. I mean, that was a big thing, and the other things weren't as big, but there were things like that that happened all the time. My church loved kids, and we didn't want anything to happen, but they didn't put any safeguards in place when it came to thinking about those kind of things. Yeah, there were not that many kids, so 2 workers is enough, but it's not enough when you have to split up like that, and with the door being that accessible to the outside or whatever. So anyway, so you could imagine that, things like that can put some dread and fear into someone not wanting to work in the nursery. And so when they do work in the nursery, they're not going to be as happy and cheerful as they should be. They're not going to be as easy to get along with, because if they're worried about something like that happening, they're going to be super quick to be not rough, but be more harsh than they really would mean to do, because they don't want it to happen again. They don't want to go through that again or whatever. But like I said, and the thing is, that was it. Someone came and told me they found a little girl. Nothing was done about it. I was in the nursery the next Wednesday night with just me and a teen again. And I said, that's the thing. I dreaded working the nursery. And I was thankful that the Lord started moving on my heart to leave the church, because I didn't want to stop working in the nursery. But I didn't enjoy doing it. It was just a dread and a chore. So like I said, needless to say, I didn't enjoy it, and when I moved to Toledo, I was a member here for over 3.5 years before I even stepped foot in the nursery, and I only did it then because I had to. But it didn't take me very long of working in there to get over all that, because all the things I dreaded and feared about the old nursery didn't happen here. It was totally different, and all the things that I associated with a nursery that were negative were gone. So that's my little story that kind of relays no one intended for that to happen, but it happened very easily because of the way the nursery was laid out, and because of no safeguards or no communication with the workers. So now I'm going to share a list of topics that, no matter what size your church is, no matter if you have a very small church and you only have 3 or 4 kids and you only have one small room, or if you're in a larger church that has more facilities and has more workers and has a lot more children to deal with, no matter the size of your church, you can think about these topics to make the work in the nursery a lot more enjoyable for the workers and for the children and for the parents themselves. They're not in any particular order. There's just a few of them. And the thing that I want, that I think the greatest thing about this church with any ministry that we have is that we're always looking to improve. Although things can be running really smooth and we don't have any problems, we don't like to stay there. Preachers always wanting to see what we can do to make it a little bit better, a little bit easier, just to take it up to that next level. We're always open to good change. We don't want to change just because there's something new, a new way of doing things just because it's new, but we want to make a change that's going to improve things for everyone involved. And our church has made the nursery and our children's ministries a priority, and I think that's really an important thing to do. And it doesn't take a lot of money for something to be a priority. It doesn't take a lot of effort even sometimes for things to be a priority. But I think that's one of the reasons I like the nursery so much here is that they are always looking to make things better and to improve. So the very first topic to think about is adequate adult supervision. And needing to be there on time, at least 15 minutes before the service. Another example, my church back home, we visit every once in a while because that's where I grew up and that's where my family is. And they've kind of gone through a phase of the church now where a lot of people don't, and I don't know if it has anything to do with the way the nursery was set up, but a lot of parents don't put their kids in the nursery. Everyone is just in a service together. So you got babies and little kids, and a lot of them will send their kids to Sunday school. They just keep them in the auditorium with them for services if they're babies. And there have been two or three times in the last year and a half when I've gone to visit my family that I've gone to church there and gone down to the nursery, and the door's been locked and the lights are out. There's no one there. They're not used to having anyone, so you have a guest come in with a child, and I understand because I grew up there. This is like my home church, my family or whatever. So I usually just end up keeping my daughter with me for Sunday school and hope that by church someone will be in there. But so even if you're at a church where you don't have a lot of babies and you're not used to having, you know, you're not used to having a nursery, there should be someone at the nursery 15 minutes before the service, no matter what, with the lights on and it looks like someone's ready to take care of children. And even if they just, you know, end up waiting until 15 minutes after song services, you know, once church has started, and if no one comes, you know, go back up and join the service if that's what they would like to do. But no matter what, there should be at least one adult responsible person at the nursery with the lights on, with the door open, with a smile, because you never know if someone's going to come. You never know if there's a new person who's moved to town that is looking for a church. That is a huge turnoff to them if they get there and if you're not prepared for them. They're going to want to look for a place that looks like they care. So make sure there's someone there, no matter what. Even if you don't normally have children, just make sure, no matter what, there's someone there in case you do. And the other thing is, like I said, our policy here is that teens can only work with their mothers in the nursery. Like I said, teens can be helpful because it's an extra body just like for playing and keeping kids distracted and with that kind of stuff. But teens really shouldn't count as one of your workers if you're counting how many bodies are in that room, because like I said, you can't always count on them to know what to do if something happens or to be responsible for major things. And so like I said, like our policy is they need to work with their mothers, and one of our new policies is that we are no longer going to allow our teen girls to change diapers or to take kids to the restroom. Just to keep things as safe and as, you know, as good as possible for our children. The other thing also to consider with how many adults are in there is to consider their experience level. Like I said, I was a single. I was in my early 20s, just graduated from college, and I didn't have any nieces or nephews. I never really held a baby till my daughter was born. Like, I just didn't have much experience with little kids, like I did back home in the nursery or whatever, but growing up, I didn't have experience. I didn't have cousins that had babies, or I didn't have a lot of experience. So consider the experience level of your workers. If they're adults, you can count on them to be responsible, but this week in the nursery, we had 16 0 to 12-month-old babies in the nursery on the first day. It's gotten bigger, you know, to date, but yes, you may have five ladies in there, but if only one of them is a mother and the other four are young singles or maybe even older but never had much experience with children, they're going to be great, but they're not going to know some things about how, you know, some things you just learn by having your own children, how, like, you know, try this, it might get them to stop crying, or try this, you know, and you think of that. And, like, yes, they may have been working in the nursery for several years and they have, they have experience, but just think about the experience level of if they've had their own, if you've got five singles back there, don't expect them to be able to quiet all those babies because they're just not going to know what to do. And grandmas are great because they've had their own kids and they have their grandkids, so they have a lot more, you know, they have a lot of experience with different things you can try to comfort them or to keep them entertained. So the very first thing is adequate adult supervision, and also consider their experience level. If they're a, you know, if they're a single, or if they've had several children, or if they're a grandmother, or like I said, like if you haven't had kids, you can still be a great help, but make sure that when you're doing, if you know the nursery scheduling is done, make sure that you don't end up with a night where everyone in there is someone who doesn't have much experience with babies, you know, babies of their own. And like I said, be prepared for guests, you know, have people there. And one thing we're running into now is, like, we schedule at least 9 ladies for every service in our nursery, sometimes 10, and we're to the point now where that's not enough, because when you have 14 babies that need bottles all at one time, 4 people in that baby side nursery is not enough to take care of it. So another thing we're trying to institute right now is to have a standby list. We're going to have a survey for all of our workers to fill out, and one of the questions on there is if they're willing to be a person that, no matter, like, last minute, not, you know, you may have already been scheduled once this month, but are you willing to be a standby person where when we need an extra body, we don't have to interrupt or have preacher, you know, during the, you know, right before the offering, ask for more workers, just someone we know we can go to and pull them back if we need extra people. And especially if you have a big Sunday, you're expecting a lot of guests, plan for more people than you think you need. And then if you don't have that many babies, then let people go back right before preaching starts. Let them go ahead and leave the nursery once people are all there and settled, you see what you have. But it's better to have too many and let people go back to the service than to get back there and know you still have an hour and a half before preaching is over and you don't have enough hands to do all that needs to be done. So just try to have an adequate number of workers and over-prepare, because, like I said, you don't want it to be where your ladies have to work in the nursery like 6 times a month just to have enough people, but you want to have more than enough, just so that because if you have more than enough, it's not going to be as much of a burden. You're not when you're working back there, you're not going to have to try to calm 5 babies yourself. So you're not going to care as much if you do have to do this twice a month or 3 times a month, because it's not as big of a headache as it is if there's just 3 of you back there and you have too many kids to take care of. So the second thing is safeguards in your nursery. Not just, like I said, you can't always pick what your facility is going to be like. You can't always build your nursery from scratch. You might be working with what you have, but think of things. Think of what kind of doors you have. Like, we loved having the Dutch door at home because it made it where we could keep it when people were dropping them off. The top could be open. You could hand the babies over. The sign-in sheet was there or whatever. But I know you can't do certain things, like because of fire hazard or whatever, but there should have been an additional latch on the door, not just a turn handle for the kids to leave. There should have been a hook and eye. There should have been something. Not a major expense, not a big deal, but it would have saved a lot of heartache for situations like that. So, think about what kind of door you have. If you are getting to pick, think about where they're going to be located. It's not that big of a deal if it's a baby nursery, but if you have a toddler nursery, try not to put the door to where it's going to open right out to a place that's not safe. Like, you know, try to, and if you already have that, gate off the area around the door so the kids can't play near the door if it gets opened, or if they're, you know, they're trying to escape or whatever. But think about those things. Think about your gates. The toys, the furniture, your snacks, everything. Think about what's in there, and not only you have a safe nursery, but have someone that can check and maintain those things, because over time things happen. And if there's not someone keeping an eye on it, a latch is going to be broken before you realize it, and then you have to deal with it at least for one service. Someone's going to have to plan around that before it can be fixed. As far as toys go, one thing, I just recently took over being the coordinator, so this last week came into all the nurseries and went through all the toy boxes and checked the toys. And one thing is I found that we had accumulated several stuffed toys, like stuffed animals and things. And really, you shouldn't have stuffed animals or stuffed dolls in the nursery for cleanliness sake, because you can't you can't clean them. You can't wipe them with a Clorox wipe or spray them with the any like with the sprays or whatever. And if you're not thinking about it, no one's going to throw them in the laundry every week, which is what should happen. And a lot of them don't wash well anyway. So I recently this week took all the stuffed animals and all the stuffed toys out. I took them home to my own laundry, washed them, and the ones that washed well, I think will be okay. I'm going to put back in, but not until I talk to the captains, let them know that every week if these get taken off the shelf, they need to go in the laundry basket because they need to be washed. But like if you are purchasing toys or you have toys, just think about those things. Think of if it's, I know like we have one little school bus back there that the kids probably love to play with it, but I don't know how this happens, but it has so many crevices in it. It's always full of crumbs. And you don't want your nursery worker to have to spend 5 minutes every Sunday cleaning crumbs out of there, but you also don't want the crumbs to be in there. So that's probably a toy that can just be taken out and replace it with something that will work better. So just think about the kinds of toys you have, the size of the toys that you have. We have some smaller, all of our small toys, like that we consider teething toys on the baby side, we have a separate bucket just for them where the kids can't get them. We will give them to the babies. And then we have a separate bucket you can put them in after they've been used. So we make sure they get cleaned very well before they get put back into the rotation. But just make sure that there's not, for our babies, we have a big bucket that they can just play with and take things out. But those are only bigger toys, nothing that is small they could put in their mouth without anyone realizing. And we don't keep any teether toys in that part of the nursery. Teether toys are for them, for us to give them if they're in the swing or if we're holding whatever, because we don't want those passed around. But just think about how safe things are. One thing that we have right now that I would like to see change is in we have lots of rockers in the baby side, but on the toddler side of the nursery, we only there's no chairs. We have folding chairs if the workers need to sit down. But the way it is now, I don't like the folding chairs because the kids are going to climb on whatever chair's in there. But the folding chairs, they're not that sturdy, and two or three kids try to climb on them, and the only place we had to put them right now is right near the light switch. So they're always up on the chair, turn the lights off and on. But just think about those things. You think about your furniture. Think about where you're placing it. If you have toddlers that love to climb, are they going to be able to climb from that chair to the cabinet? Are they going to be able to reach the door handle? Are they going to be able to reach the light switch? So just think about those safety things and just make it as hard as possible for them to get into any trouble and make it as easy as possible for the workers to not have to like constantly you watching this corner because something could happen there because it's not that safe. The next thing is cleanliness and order. Make sure that the area the parents can see is very welcoming, especially at the very beginning when people are dropping them off first thing, in the morning and the evening. Make sure it's nice, like lit. Make sure the lights are on. Make sure it's nice and bright, and make sure it looks very clean and orderly. Make sure it looks like you're ready to take children in, and make it apparent that you care. And as far as like cleanliness goes, practicality, you want something that is going to work. You don't want to clean but not really be doing anything because then it's like you're wasting your time and you feel like you're doing good but you're not actually keeping the kids safe from germs. Find something that works, and then we also want it to be where it's not where the workers have to spend 2 hours after every service cleaning up. And we've recently switched, I know since last pasture school, maybe even since like this year, we switched from using Clorox. We used to use Clorox wipes. We use those for everything. We wipe down the cribs and the bouncer seats and the swings and everything. We recently switched to using the Clorox Anywhere spray. It's a spray that you can spray on any hard surface. You spray it on. After it sits for 2 minutes at least, then it's been sanitized. And a lot of times, the big toys, you can just lay out, spray them, flip them, spray them, go do your other stuff and come back, and you can just put them away. Smaller things sometimes need to be wiped because the water won't evaporate. But that's made it even quicker for cleaning because you don't have to sit there and wipe every surface. You just spray it down till it's wet, and then after 2 minutes, the surface has been sanitized. And then we still use wipes for other things. We try to keep the wipes away from any toys because this Clorox Anywhere spray has no bleach in it, so it's safe for the kids if they put their mouth on it or whatever. And we still use the wipes, but not for things that the kids actually handle and play with. Not just like sanitizing the stuff, but just make sure it doesn't get cluttered, that things don't start to accumulate. People leave bottle lids or just little odds and ends. Have a place where those things can go where they're out of sight so it doesn't look cluttered. Just make sure that it always looks nice and clean and orderly so it looks welcoming to people. And remember, as far as cleanliness goes, I know that sometimes for myself, I feel like, oh, I wouldn't mind if my daughter played with it this way. But to think about these, some of these kids are not my daughters, and some people are much more picky when it comes to germs than I am. So always do the best that you can, and always it gets frustrating to parents when their kids pick up every cold that goes around, and it's going to happen. It really, really is. But the better you clean, the better you sanitize, the less that will happen. And even when things do happen, if the parents know what you do, they're going to be more understanding if they know that you do clean, you do sanitize, you do try. It's not going to be as big of an issue to them if their kid does catch a cold. But if they know that your habit is just wipe the crumbs off and let it go till next week or whatever, it's gonna be more frustrating to them if their kid is always coming up sick, because they're gonna be able to point and say this is probably why, because things haven't been sanitized well. The next point is communicate. And I actually, I said these weren't in any particular order, like communication should have been first. I believe that this is the key component to any ministry that you have, but it's also the one I think a lot of times is the most lacking. You have people that are in charge, you have your workers, and you assume they know what they're supposed to be doing, and you just let it go. But I think communication, I think for myself and the experience I've had, communication would fix a lot of the issues that I've dealt with in the nursery. And it needs to be open and honest in all directions. There should be a clear line of communication from the workers to the parents, from the workers to their to who's in charge of them, from that person to the pastor. It needs to be not just like they know they can talk to you, but they know how to approach things. There needs to be clear communication so that people know, if I have an issue, here's exactly what I do. Because if not, and it's going to happen anyway, but if not, all your workers get in a little tiff over something, they just talk among themselves, and it never goes any higher. Then it becomes an issue, and no one even knows it's an issue because it hasn't gone up the ladder. So it needs to be a clear path of communication, and not just that, okay, we have it set up that you know, okay, if you have an issue, here's who you talk to. Not just that. You need to take a proactive step, and you need to communicate with them. Check up with them, because they're not always going to come to you about stuff. And I had an experience here with that was frustrating. And I don't want to be offended. I don't want to be offensive to anyone if they hear what I say, because I'm an honest illustration of what happened. And I will be the first to say that I was the most in the wrong, because I was the captain that Sunday. I was the one who was supposed to be in charge. But we made the transition from using Clorox wipes to using the Clorox Anywhere spray. Someone, I don't know who, someone made that decision, and it was instituted, but nothing was said to anyone. So I was a first nursery captain after the change. I walked in on a Sunday morning, and all of our wipes are gone, and there's a no cleaner, but we have no idea what's going on. And I didn't realize, all I saw was there are no wipes, so it's time for us to start doing stuff, and there's nothing for us to clean with. So we're a little, what do we do? We're like looking, did someone not do inventory? We're looking through all the cabinets. Everything is gone. And then someone finds a bottle of spray. So I guess we're supposed to be using this river. And I said, I was wrong, because as the captain, as a leader, I should have had a good spirit and just went with it. But I was a little bit frustrated, and I grumbled too. What do they expect for us to do? We don't know what we're doing. It would have been nice to know. And the only reason we even knew that was because someone who did know from being in the office happened to be dropping their kid off, and they heard us. Like, what are we supposed to do? Where's all of our stuff? And she said, oh, we're doing this now. Well, it's not a big deal. It was a great policy. It was a good change for the nursery. But when no one knew about it, it was really frustrating. And I was wrong, but it made me feel bad because I didn't know what was going on. I was supposed to be the one to instruct the people about what we're doing or whatever. Like I said, I was wrong because I should have had a better attitude about it and not allowed there to be any grumbling at all. But I made sure the person who came in after me knew exactly what was going on, because I didn't want the same thing to happen again. But like that, it was a good change, but there was no communication. Even if there was just a note on the bottle saying, and then I'm weird, I read labels or whatever, so I'm the one who read the bottles and read that it has to sit for at least 2 minutes. But without communication, the ladies are going to spray, wipe, and put it away, and it did absolutely no good. We wasted the money because we've used the spray, but it hasn't cleaned. Nothing has been cleaned because it's been done or whatever. So just make sure, especially if you're changing something or doing something different, make sure you communicate it clearly to at least the people, the captains or the people who are in charge, so they can tell their workers. But even if there's not a change going on, have periodic meetings with your captains just so you can get feedback. Like I said, I'm a captain. I work twice. I work every other Sunday as a captain in the nursery. But I know there are things that happen, but nothing's ever happened when I've been in there. No one grumbles and complains. There's never been any complaints. I know there are some out there because I hear them from other people. But especially as being the coordinator now, it's going to be more my responsibility to take care of things like that. But I never know about them because they don't happen when I'm in there. So we need to have regular meetings so that people have a time to vent or have a time to tell you what's been going on or what they deal with. And not just that, like as a captain, I do things a certain way, but I hadn't really worked with other, as a captain, I haven't worked with other captains, and so I don't know how they do things exactly. So if you have periodic meetings where you can just all talk and, you know, find out, okay, when this happens, what do you do? Because there may be one person who does it really, really, really well. Other people do good, but there's one person who has a great way of doing it, but if she's the only person who knows about it, everyone else is doing it in a good way, but it could be done easier and better. So just open lines of communication, and to be honest, if you have an issue with someone, talk to that person only, but be honest and upfront with them. You don't want to lose workers, you don't want people to be frustrated or upset with you, but they'll appreciate your honesty, and instead of trying to get them to guess what your issue is with them and then walking away wondering, you know, what's really going on, just be upfront. If you have a problem, just be clear about what that is and what can be done to fix it. Don't make them guess at what the issue is, or don't make them try to have to figure out what you expect of them now that you know there's a problem. You know, make sure that it's just very clear and honest communication. And I'll put this in there too. Think about your plan of contact when there should be a line of communication from the workers to the parents. Make sure that it's clear and understandable. We have the blessing of having a pager system here, but not all churches can afford that, and not all churches have a size church where they need that. But we have a system where the ladies get a pager when their child is dropped off, and if we need them for any reason, we can page them. Like I said, my church back home is obviously not going to have that. It's a much smaller church. They're not going to have the finances or really the need. If you only have 6 kids, you don't need to buy a full pager system. But when a parent, especially if it's a guest, drops their child off, before they leave, they should know exactly what is going to happen if they're needed. And my church back home, they use their ushers. If we need a parent for some reason, there was always an usher at the back of the auditorium that we could get to find them. But if it's a guest, make sure that usher knows who that parent is. Don't send them into the auditorium looking for a parent. They have no idea who they are because they don't know where they're going to be sitting or what they look like or anything. So make sure that will relieve some fears or qualms of a parent dropping their child for the first time if they know that if my child needs me, they will find me and they will be willing to, you know, to do that or whatever. So just have a clear plan of contact. And what I did back home with mine is I gave the ladies in the nursery my cell phone number, and if they needed me, I kept my phone on vibrate, but if they needed me, they could just page my cell phone and I would know to come back or whatever. And like I said, don't start doing that without talking, with your husband or whatever, and like having that be a policy. But you know, make sure the parents are going to have their cell phone turned off. But if you don't have a paging system, make sure that the parents do, you know, a clear way of knowing how to get a parent from out of the auditorium, because the goal of the nursery is to keep the auditorium as quiet and as easy for the people to listen to the preaching as possible. So if you're having to send people in all the time to look for parents or whatever, it's not a good thing. So have a clear line of communication in all directions, from the workers down to the parents, from the workers up to the authority, from the authority down to all of the workers, just so everyone's on the same page. Another point is consistency. People, they like to know what to expect. And if things are always done the same way, it makes it a lot easier on your workers. It makes it great for your kids because your regular, normal people that are nursery, your children, they know exactly what to expect. Parents, workers, and children all appreciate consistency. How and where you do things, what's expected of your workers. That's a big thing, as it goes with communication, but be consistent in what you expect out of your workers before, during, and after service, what they're responsible for. And that means someone has to make the decisions, like, and set the policies, and then just make sure they're communicated clearly. I know I'm taking way more time than I'm supposed to, so I'll be fast. Finally, I just want to go over some of the key points from our manual, and that's the first thing. Someone made the decisions, and then we decided to write them down. And I think no matter if your policy book is going to be this big or whatever, having them written down so people can see them, so they know beforehand what's expected of them and what our goals are, is very, 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 very important. That's something that would make a big, big difference to your workers, to your parents, to everyone involved, just to be able to see in writing, here is what is expected of me, here is how we deal with certain situations. And so, like I said, I'll be quick because I've taken too much time. First thing, having a sign-in sheet. That's how we do it, is we have a sheet of paper where people write their kids' names down, and then it has a place for them to list any instructions or any specifications over. But make sure your workers know that that is law. What the parents write, to the best of their ability, they need to follow by, and not decide, well, I think this will work better, or I'd rather do this. Make sure they know that the instruction sheet need to be followed, and make sure the instruction sheets are easy for the parents to fill out and understand, so you get the best and most information that you can about each child and what they need. If they're going to take a bottle, if they're going to be nourished at what time, so we can expect for that to happen. If they can have snacks, what kind of snacks? All those different things. And one thing that we're talking about doing is actually adding a giant dry erase board into the baby's side of the nursery, so that the captains can transfer that important information up onto the big board, so that instead of a worker have to keep running back and forth and checking lists, okay, what is this kid supposed to have? You can look at the board and find the child easier and quicker and see, okay, it's time for their bottle, that's why they're fussing. That's something that we're thinking about adding. But one of the policies I think is important here is that only the workers and the children are allowed in the nursery. For no reason is a parent able to come into the nursery proper. We have a place where they can take their children if they need to feed them, nurse them, discipline them, whatever. There's a place where they can do that, but they're not allowed to come into the nursery itself. And that keeps the facilities cleaner, because we know the shoes aren't coming in. But it also makes it to where you don't have to worry about if the door is closed properly, because only the workers have opened and closed that door. It keeps situations from coming up. And then who works in the nursery? How I talked about, like, we use teens, but we only use teens when if they're able to work in the nursery with their mother, and they know what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. And we have a written out sick policy so that parents know. And all we did is, this was done when I was still the secretary. All I did was I contacted a local daycare and found out what their guidelines were, what their fever limits were, those kind of things. And they're just written down in a written form so that parents can know beforehand, this is what we like. If your kid is running a fever over 101, we would like for them not to be in the nursery or whatever. But just having it written down makes it clear. Someone doesn't have to get there and see a child and say, oh, I don't know if they're too sick or not. It's already written. Here's already the guidelines we go by. I think that's an important thing to include. And we just, that's a part of our thing. We ask them not to bring them if they're sick and contagious, and then we tell them what our idea of sick and contagious is. We just got that from a local daycare, is where all that came from. Who works in the nursery, like I said, they need to be, we have a policy where they have to have been a member in good standing, which means like someone who's been coming faithfully for at least 3 months. It's not a good idea to let someone come in. And that's the thing, you may know them, you may know what church they came from, but you need to let them come and sit and be here for several months before you put them right in, just to, for appearance sake and just for safety sake. And leadership is very important, and I think it's a good idea to have one person in the nursery food service that is in charge. So there is someone who can make decisions and someone who can get things done. But make sure it's someone who's going to be willing to say to a worker, here's what you need to do, here's what needs to be done. Make sure it's someone who's able to communicate what needs to be done, and will also keep a good attitude among everyone. We ask our workers to help with cleanup just so the captain doesn't get stuck doing everything. And if everyone pitches in, it takes a lot less time. But it needs to be something that can be communicated. Here's what I want you to do. Not just everyone starts like doing their own thing or whatever. It's just like someone to be able to say, okay, you run the vacuum, you strip the beds, you do this, and it will all get done in a timely fashion. As far as sanitary things go, we have chosen not to have any shoes in our nursery for the 0 to 12. From 0 up until age 2. Our 2-year-old nursery is more like a regular Sunday school class, is what we try to do with them as much as possible. So everyone wears shoes in there. But for our little ones, we have socks that's provided by the church for the ladies to put on before they get into the nursery area, just to keep things cleaner. We also have smocks that the ladies wear, just so you can look in and immediately see where the workers are. They stand out to you, and it just keeps their clothes clean, and it just, um, for, um, just keeps things more sanitary. Another new policy we recently added was a policy just written out, very simple, doesn't really say anything, but policy regarding toy donations. And because ladies do love to bring things in, that's great. That keeps the nursery, keeps the churches off not to purchase a lot of things. But there should be a written policy regarding that. And like I said, ours is new and it doesn't say anything. But all it does say is that anyone desiring to donate new or used items to the nursery, you know, toys, books, clothes, etc., may do so through the nursery coordinator. So they just need to know who do they contact. And it says, for the safety of our nursery children, please do not just drop items off in the nursery, which is current policy. Without policies, that's what happens. Someone has a donation, they just bring it in and say, oh, you know, we're done with this, we thought you guys would like to use it or whatever. It's not good, because first of all, there are toys in there that I don't think are appropriate for a church setting that have just somehow gotten to the toy rotation. And I just recently cleaned all those out. But not that anyone meant or even thought about it. It's just like, here's a good toy. It still works. Let's put it in the church nursery. But so that things don't go in there that aren't safe, that are not going to be easily cleaned, but also aren't going to follow the line of what the direction preacher is going with our children. So they just need to know. Like I said, it's not very specific. It's just they just need to know, here's who I contact. Here's how I do it. It doesn't say anything specific, but then it gives the nursery coordinator gets the job of saying, okay, this is still in good enough condition, this is still usable, this we can use, and it gets in that way. But if you tell people nothing, they're just going to do what they think is best. And that's not always what is going to be best for the nursery. So just think about those things. Think about what you can do to prevent something happening just by having it in a written policy. And I think that is the most thing. That actually got missed when we updated our book. But I said it's just very basic, just telling them, if you have a donation, here's who you contact. And don't just leave it in the nursery or whatever. And make sure that there's a clear ladder of authority so that people know, like I said, with communication, where to go, who to tell. And I guess that is it. And I'm sorry I took so much time.
I know that's an awful lot of information to digest, but Jen will be great as our coordinator. She was our church secretary, as many of you probably know, and she's very, organized, and she'll keep it running well. And this next session, I'm told, will be ready very soon. It's on homeschool. And I think she's incorporated a little bit of a skit, and then she's going to tell you a little bit about our homeschool. Won't be long, but I know a lot of you probably have homeschoolers in your church. Maybe you're a homeschooler, and there's a good way of doing it and a bad way of doing it. Sometimes homeschoolers can tend to be kind of distant from the church because there's a lot been written on doing your own thing and keeping your children, now the Sunday school program and everything else, keeping them separated from all children. So anyway, I think she's ready, and we'll let her get started.
And Lord, please give me strength and help me to be a blessing to these ladies, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Lord, here we go. Oh, Lord, I can't do this. There's too many. There's too many, Lord. I can't go out there. I can't do it. Oh, Lord, you got to help me. There's 1,000 ladies out there. How can I do this, Lord? Oh, okay, Lord. Okay, yes. Be strong and of good courage. I'll do it, Lord. Be strong and of good courage. Okay, all right. I'm going, Lord. I can't do it, Lord. I can't do it. Lord, did you see them? Did you see them out there? I can't do it. Oh, Lord. They have eyes. Lord, they have eyes. And they're pastors' wives and evangelists' wives and missionary wives. Lord, they're perfect and they're going to know that I'm not. Lord, I can't do it. I can't do it. Yeah. Yes, Lord, I know. I know. Okay. I'll just say that. Okay. They're just sinners saved by grace. They're just sinners saved by grace. They're just sinners saved by grace. Okay, Lord. They're just sinners. They're just sinners. Okay. Hi. My name's Lisa, Lise, and I just am here to tell you that homeschooling is not a detriment to social skills. No, really, that is my name. Hi, ladies. It's great to see you all here. This is absolutely wonderful. I am so glad that our church does a pastor school and evangelist school and missionary school and whatever you happen to be. And I'm glad you all were able to make it. And just remember, no matter what's going on back home, the Lord can take care of it. And he wants you here and just get all the blessing that you can get. Before I talk about the homeschool, my brains. I worked as an RN for a while, and if you didn't have your brains, you were sunk. So I gotta have my brains. But I wanted to say something first. You think you're here because your husbands were called to a pastor school, but there's something else going on underneath the surface. Now, I have known Cindy Sowell for 16 years. And behind that friendly, wonderful face and that loving heart, there is a plan, there is a scheme to make every Bible-believing Christian lady in the world to know and love and pray for each other. And I know that. I've watched her over the years. I mean, you wouldn't believe what she makes us do here just to get to know each other. I mean, I don't know who you've heard speak yet, but we have to go to ladies' fellowships, and we have to have secret pals, and we have to pray for each other. And she even encouraged us to make meals for each other when someone's sick or has a baby. Can you believe that? I mean, it's just terrible what we have to go through here because she wants us all to just love each other and pray and have grace for each other. And, you know, you can't say no to a pastor's wife. Because I know in 1 Timothy there is a scripture that if you refuse a request from a pastor's wife, a woman's skin will become covered with sore boils, and she will gain 20 pounds, and she will burn her husband's favorite dinner, and she will be unclean until evening. So you cannot say no to a pastor's wife. So we do it, and we come to the fellowships, and do what Cindy says, but just remember, you're under here under false pretenses. It's not all about your husbands, but it's also about you and the blessing that you can get to know each other and maybe make a friend that can help you, support you, tell you when you're wrong, but also love you and pray for you when you're not. And I'm just glad you're here, and I hope that you do get a blessing from being here. Now, what am I up here for? Oh, yeah. Homeschool group. Yeah. Okay. I have 5 children, and the younger 4 I homeschooled. They're all graduated except for the youngest. And 2 of them I did homeschool all the way through. One of them is in college. And so I do have quite a bit of homeschooling experience. My youngest will be in 8th grade this year. And actually, we have been homeschooling since this homeschool group began here, which was about 1996, the 1996-97 school year. And it was started here by Tom and Melanie Sandiford, and I'm sure a few of you know of them. They were our assistant pastor and his wife at that time. And they were the leaders of the homeschool group until he got called to be a pastor. about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and then my husband Ken and I became the leaders of the group. I was looking through stuff about the homeschool group, and I thought it was interesting that our very first senior graduate was Jenny Kaywood, who is now Jenny Suddeth. She was playing the piano for the special music last night, and she's still here. And I think that was really neat. And our very first kindergarten graduate that year was Ryan Henold, and he's here still. He's graduated from high school, and he's still here. So I just thought that was kind of neat. And that's just a little bit of history of the homeschool group and how long we've been here, since 1996. Our purposes of our homeschool group, we're not real highly organized. We don't do school classes. We don't have, you know, we don't meet every day or even every week. But our purpose is to provide some learning experiences and social gatherings and opportunities for our students to express talents and skills in various ways, and just to kind of facilitate the homeschooling. There are a few reasons for people to homeschool. One of them is it's you've prayed about it and it's just right for your family, and that's what you have in your heart that you want to do. A lot of people do not have the availability of a good Christian school, or it's too far away, or it's not financially feasible, so they will choose to homeschool instead of sending their child to a public school. Another influence is also other people in the church, what other families. Our homeschool group, at one point, it seemed like almost everybody was homeschooling, and then it goes through a phase where not very many people are, but it kind of goes in cycles that way. So that makes a difference, too, your child's friends, who they're with all the time, and what they're doing. Also, we have some people who homeschool because there are special needs of the child after elementary. In public school system, they have all kinds of resources for elementary children. But once they get in junior high, it's just like everything kind of fizzles up and they're just kind of left on their own. So some people will choose to homeschool at that point because the resources aren't there. As far as requirements, I wanted to bring up state requirements. Homeschooling is governed by the state. Each state has its own set of rules governing homeschooling in their state. For example, we do a lot of Michigan and Ohio, being on the border. They're very different. Extremely. Michigan is like, you're alive, you can homeschool. I mean, that's like their regulations are very minimal. For instance, their compulsory age is 6 to 16. In Ohio, you're compulsory till 18 to attend school. The number of days that you have to provide instruction. In Michigan, there's no mandate on number of days to instruct your kids. In Ohio, it's 900 hours, which is about 180 days a year. In Michigan, the required subjects are the basics, reading, math, science. In Ohio, they add physical education, fine arts, first aid, safety, and fire prevention. In Michigan, there's no law that you have to notify your local school superintendent that you're homeschooling. But in Ohio, we have to send in an application. We have to notify them we're homeschooling. We have to give a list of our curriculum. We have to assure them that we are teaching them all the classes that we're supposed to. We also have to they have to be assessed, and the local school gets an assessment, like a standardized test or some other form of assessment every year. So as you can see, states can vary quite a bit in what they require of homeschoolers. And Ohio, I understand, is one of the most restrictive. But I haven't had any trouble, with my local school district. But another thing I wanted to bring up along those lines is a group called Homeschool Legal Defense Association. They are a nationwide group of lawyers that have been fighting for homeschool rights since the 80s. They have done most, have been involved in most, if not all, of the legislation that has eased up and allowed, because in the 80s, homeschooling wasn't even allowed, and now it's legal. And I'm pretty sure all 50 states you can homeschool. Now, like I said, they all have different restrictions, but HSLDA is a very good group, and they are in Washington constantly lobbying for homeschool rights. And it's just a good group to be a part of as a family. If you ever get in trouble, if somebody ever questions you, if you ever have a problem like with a social worker or the school board or whatever, whoever wants to get involved in your life, they will fight for you. And it's like $115 a year to belong to it. So it is something to consider. The next thing I wanted to talk about was when you have a homeschool group, you do have activities, and we have field trips. We do things like biology dissection for 10th graders. If they're interested, we'll get the whole kit and we'll do dissection here and pigs and stuff like that, and that's always fun. And we also do elementary gym and craft days once a month. At those, we do some science experiments, and we let them play board games or play in the gym or and do crafts and just things to get the elementary kids together and doing something. We also have a Be a Blessing night where each child can demonstrate their talent or skill, whatever that may be. I mean, we've had kids come up and just show how to build a toy or whatever. You know, it just, and whatever they are interested in and want to do, it gives them a chance to come up and just show everyone what they can do. We have an annual Christmas party. The local Christian school has a fine arts competition every year for the 7th through 12th graders, so we've been involved in that. And we've also been blessed to have a good Christian school, and they consider us family, really. I mean, the pastor there and everything, they're really great. And so our homeschoolers have been able to play volleyball with them, and just it's been great to have a relationship with them. We have a back-to-school barbecue every year, and those are our main activities that we do every year. Most of our activities now are geared toward the elementary because our teen group here is very active. They are constantly doing things, so we really don't have to supplement that a lot. Our teens here get together quite a bit. And also, our elementary, it just started within the last year. The first through sixth graders here are actually starting to do things together, too. So our kids get plenty of socialization in this church. That is for sure. There's no lack of that. In fact, we have to hold them back. No, that's enough. Okay. We also do field trips, and some ideas for field trips might be to a factory. We went to the Jiffy, the baking mix, the factories up in Chelsea, Michigan. We went there. We've gone to the zoo, to Metro Parks for educational things. The Toledo Symphony has a young people's concert. They have young people's concerts every year. We've done those. A college around here has plays in the afternoon that is geared toward school children, and we've taken groups there to plays. We have museums around town. Of course, there's the Toledo Museum of Art, which is a little much for elementary, but the high schoolers can enjoy that, and we have a firefighters museum, and that's really good for the little kids. So we have those around here. Orchards, farms, agricultural field trips, those are always good. Historical sites. We're blessed with one big one up near Detroit in Dearborn, the Henry Ford Museum and Greenfield Village. You can spend 2 or 3 days up there. But that's a fabulous thing. We have presidential homes near here, the Hayes Home in Fremont. And we've been to different reenactments of military battles and stuff around here because this used to be the Wild West and Mad Anthony Wayne and the Indian battles and Fallen Timbers. And so we get reenactments of Revolutionary, French and Indian War stuff around here quite a bit. And that is just some ideas of things you could look into if you were looking for things to do with homeschoolers. There's plenty out there, even if you live in the country or a rural place. I mean, we take hour and a half, 2 hour trips to do stuff sometimes too, like up to Chelsea for the factory, and We're hoping to go to Defiance, which is about an hour. They're supposed to have a fabulous playground there, so we're going to go check out the playground. But the only requirement we have to be in our homeschool group is you have to be a member of the church and be a homeschooler, and that's it. And I think that's all I wanted to tell you. Oh, no, it's not. I forgot the most important thing. Graduation. High school is a whole different ball game, usually for homeschooling, because now you've gone from just 1 year at a time teaching to give them the best you can for that year. Now when you get ninth grade, now you have to look forward 3 or 4 years to what that child might want to do after they graduate, and you have to tailor now your educating to where that child's going to be in 4 years. And of course, you know, how many 14-year-olds know where they're going to be? But, you know, you try and you do your best if you want, you know, whether you want them to go to college or if you want them to go to a Bible school, or if they want to just start working, whatever it is that they're going to do, you have to start tailoring. And so it gets a little more difficult in high school. But we do have, for our graduation here, we do have some requirements. You can't just be a homeschooler and graduate from Hope Baptist Church Homeschool Fellowship. You have to come to the other graduations. We can require attendance at all the graduations once you're in ninth grade. You cannot be graduating from anywhere else because there are a lot of online schools now. Ohio has at least 3 public schools online now that a person, they'll give you your computer, they give you internet access, they give you all your books, you have public school teachers. It's like being in a public school at home and you don't have to pay a thing. That's been since 2000. So that's kind of changed the homeschooling thing a little bit too, because there are people that opt for that. Because they give you everything, even the computer. So that we've had that in Ohio for about the last 10 years. Also, there homeschoolers have opportunities to be associated with satellite schools, where they go and they take classes and they can actually get a diploma, even though they're considered homeschoolers. They're not really fully enrolled in the satellite school, but they're. So they're still considered homeschoolers, but they do get a diploma from there. And some kids choose to graduate with the satellite school, and some kids choose to graduate with the public school. And so we have all of that going on, but you can't do both. So if you're going to graduate here from your homeschool group, then you can't have graduated from somewhere else. So that's a requirement. We also want to make sure they're academically at a 12th grade level before they graduate. We have standardized testing. We can do Iowa testing, or if they took an ACT or an SAT, that would qualify. If they have a GED, a lot of our homeschoolers will get a GED in order to graduate from the homeschool program. You can have a diploma from an online or satellite school but still want to graduate here, and that's okay. Or if none of those work, then a parent can actually bring in a transcript, the student's high school transcripts, and my husband looks them over and makes a determination, you know, based on the transcripts, whether they are able to graduate with the homeschool group or not. So I know Pastor really, he wants standards, you know. He doesn't want graduation of people that haven't done anything academically for 3 years and now they're going to graduate, and that's good, and we agree with that. And so that's his impetus for all that. It's good to have the homeschool group here, but we even test our kindergartners before they graduate. And our kindergarten graduation, we have that every year too, and they have to do calculus, and they have to write a 1,000-word essay on nuclear physics, and you know, nothing hard or anything. No, they have to be able to recognize numbers and letters. They have to be able to recognize two-digit numbers and write two-digit numbers, and read one-vowel words like bet, you know, one vowel, and be able to write their full name, and that's the kindergarten test. So if they can do all that, they can graduate from kindergarten. And now I think that is it. So I would like to close in a prayer, if you would join me. Lord God, I'm just so glad that these ladies were able to make it, Lord. I know their lives are busy, and they have things going on and a lot on their minds, and dealing with family and church and all that they have to deal with, Lord. But I pray that you'd give them some relaxation here, some fellowship, some fun, some knowledge, some strength, Lord, whatever it is that each one of these ladies needs this week to go home and to serve you and to be the proper helpmeet for her husband. Lord, I pray that something here this week will help that. And Lord, I thank you for Cindy and all that she does to promote fellowship among the ladies. And Lord, I know firsthand, Lord, that nothing can compare to what your people and your ladies can do when someone needs them for prayer. And Lord, I thank you for that. I thank you for loving us. And I just pray all this in your precious name, Jesus Christ. Amen.
These sessions were good for some of you. I know some have a lot that homeschool, some churches don't. Nurseries, they're all different sizes. But how we deal with our children, they are the church of tomorrow. That's why we see them so important at our church. So we're going to take, we're going to shorten a little bit, maybe about a 10-minute break. So, you know, get out there, get a drink quickly, come in quickly. We don't want to be too late. Thank you for coming. Let me remind you again, see the lady with the clipboard about tomorrow needing a ride.